The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books. I'm Craig Wade.
And I'm Brian Allen Delaney.
And today we are going to be talking about a movie and a book, just like every week.
Wow, that's kind of surprising, actually.
Yeah, we could actually just use this intro for the beginning of all of it, like every episode. But no, we're going to be talking about A Monstrous Place by Matthew Scott. Yeah. Man.
It's live.
Yeah, as soon as we go live, I start just tripping up left and right.
as soon as we go live.
Well, I could edit it out, even though I never really did, but whatever. So we're going to be talking about that and the new film from The Asylum, Dead Seven. So before we get into any of that,
this is going to be a fun episode.
Is it? Before we get into that, what's new with you, dude?
Not much, I guess. Well, I mean, if anybody cares, I guess by the time that this actually airs on like the stream and stuff, it'll be my birthday,
dude. It'll be past your birthday.
Yeah, I know,
dude. But you'll be 33 years young.
Thanks.
You don't like me giving the actual age?
No, you got to keep like a little bit of mystique.
That's what we're keeping, mystique.
Yeah.
I did one of those like things that it approximates your age based on a picture.
Oh, God. Were you like way older?
No. But I was surprised because I always get carded for beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been within 3 years that I got carded for a rated R movie.
Nice.
So, but no, it guessed 1 year younger than I am. So it was guessing like 31.
I did one recently and it gave me like something in the 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that baby face.
Yeah. Dude. These pudgy cheeks.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah. So yeah, this week I finally watched The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you like it?
I really liked it, actually. I was surprised at how much I liked it because I'm pretty, ambivalent, not really about Star Wars. Like I like it.
Just everything in general.
Pretty much. No, like, I mean, Star Wars is fun, but it's not something that I've ever obsessed over. And so like I was fine with catching it on video
or yeah.
On DVD. But yeah, it's,
you bought a VHS tape of it.
Yeah. So yeah, it was one of the best red boxes I've had in a while. The only thing like it basically was episode four, like, and it kind of bothers me. I know it shouldn't because like, if it was a soft reboot of the series, which in essence it kind of is, these are just like the Disney years, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's because it's not, because it's episode seven, that kind of bothers me that it is a soft reboot. But that's just me. I'm probably nowhere near as annoyed as all the people that have invested all their time into reading the canon and then now it's all out the window.
Oh, yeah. That would piss me off. No, okay. So here's what I think about it. Is I think it's all a red herring.
What do you mean?
I think that they're setting it up and you're like, oh man, this is exactly like episode four, but he's going to go somewhere completely off the rails for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think. Just because like, you know, I don't know. It would be boring not to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's got to be some change in the formula.
Yeah, well, what actually kind of bothered me is when they went to the place that was pretty much the cantina.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? They're even doing
No, dude, it was a cantina, but it was in the forest.
I forgot that part.
It's completely different.
Yeah. But I mean, as far as the characters, like Ray was awesome.
Yeah.
And Finn was good. Like I really liked the new characters. That was one of the things that I was kind of iffy about.
Yeah.
That they were going to just like go off the rails with unlikable characters. But mm-hmm. No, I mean, I really liked it.
Well, C-3PO was still there.
Yeah. And R2-D2 was, you know, heartbroken.
Oh, yeah. That was so sad.
Yeah. And before I actually watched it, like, I was like, this BB-8 thing, like, I hate him. Right? Because, uh-huh. You know, if you watch it out of context, I was just judging by the character design. And I was like, he kind of just looks like a futuristic version of R2-D2. And no, I loved him. I thought he was great. Like, I was like getting sad at all the right places. Like, oh no. Yeah. And I forget Oscar Isaac's character's name. The guy that flies.
Poe Dameron?
Yeah. He was awesome too. And yeah. Like, I mean, but it is odd how much they pretty much seem to have modeled him exactly after Han Solo.
Well, spoiler alert. I don't know if you were paying attention, but Han Solo died.
No, I know.
So they need a new one.
But, yeah, no, but what, I guess.
What I like, though, is like it wasn't they weren't exactly the same characters. You know, like Poe was sort of a mix between Luke and Han. Uh-huh. You know, whereas like Rey had some Luke in her, but also, I don't know, some other people.
Yeah.
You know, like she was in sort of like her mannerisms and stuff, almost like Obi-Wan at times. Right. And everything like so they were kind of just mixing and matching people, which uh-huh. I think worked better than just having just straight. Here's the same character again.
Yeah, no, I could see that. No, but long story short, for someone that, you know, I honestly, this may be kind of an odd thing. I wouldn't even give all the Star Wars movies fives or anything like that. Well, I think I would kind of have to give it higher than I felt because given the fact that they became so legendary. But
yeah, I think you just need to rate them all twos.
No. But, I mean, I would give them all fours. Like, I mean, the first three. Well, I don't know. Part five probably would get a four and a half or five.
Yeah.
But
Empire would get higher. Huh? Empire would get higher.
Yeah. And then Jedi would probably get a three. So, anyway, I'm just not an Ewok fan. But no, I mean, long story short, I liked it. You know, I was... Yeah. I didn't want to be swept up in all the, you know, like all the hubbub. God. I didn't want to get swept up in like the public stuff. And also, yeah, I just didn't have time to watch it in theaters. Plus, it only ran for like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, but yeah, so like I liked it. But yeah. That's taken up a lot of our time. So what's up with you?
Well, I've got like, I guess a couple of trailers I kind of want to talk about.
Okay, cool. I do too.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. One real trailer, one kind of movie announcement, and then something that I'm excited that came out by Scream Factory.
Awesome. Okay, go.
Okay. So, one of them is just I can never pronounce this guy's name. The guy who did like Drive and stuff.
What's his name? I know who you're talking about.
Reffin or whatever.
Yeah. Is it Jonathan Weindig Reffin or whatever?
Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's weird that I forgot the normal name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you replaced it with an equally normal name.
Yeah. Okay.
Good call. It's okay. But like there was like a poster released for his new movie.
Uh-huh.
That I don't know what it's about or anything, but I'm probably going to watch it because I really liked Drive and the other stuff I've seen by him. It's called The Neon Demon. Have you heard about that?
No.
It looks like, it kind of looks like an 80s throwback, sort of like the posters to Drive did, you mm-hmm. know, with the, except for it doesn't have the neon writing and stuff, but it looks like an old VHS cover of just a girl with a slit throat.
Really?
That's the whole poster.
Huh. But there's not like a trailer for it yet, huh?
Nope, not yet.
Huh. Well, I mean, I love Drive. Drive was awesome.
Yeah.
I hated Only God Forgives. Hated.
I never saw that one.
So, well, I don't really know. What else has he done?
I don't think he's done anything else. So I really liked Drive, though.
No, like, dude, Only God Forgives was so, just like, so bad. I don't know. Why? Because there was no talking, period, which can work. Only it didn't work in this film, trust me. The violence was extreme, but it didn't pull it off. Mm-hmm. Like, it's as if, like, a much lesser director tried to do a Tarantino movie with no dialogue. So that's kind of the problem with it, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, either way, I'll watch it, because the thing is, I know he did a film before that, and I think that it was better, or like it was a good movie, but you know, the expectation for his follow-up to Drive was so high that I'm not sure that he could have beat it, so he probably just tried to do something totally different.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where the problem lied. But yeah, no, that sounds pretty cool. Kind of odd of a poster choice, though.
Shut up.
Shut up.
He also directed Bronson.
Bronson. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Bronson's a classic. I actually like that even more than Drive.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a quick trailer. It's like a low-budget movie, but I think it was kind of neat. It's called The Shallows.
Yeah?
You hear about that?
No.
It's basically, it looks like to be a combination of Jaws and Tremors.
Jaws, right? And Tremors?
Yeah, that's... in a way, because there's not much in the trailer except for, you know, basically some action shots or whatever. But person swimming in the ocean, and then there's sharks, and then like low tide comes in, and they get kind of stuck on this like reef,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's this enormous shark just kind of circling, waiting for tide to come up, so it can get to him.
And it's called The Shallows.
Yeah,
that kind of sounds like a mixture of that with that segment in Creepshow 2 with the raft.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's a cool premise.
Yeah.
Like, a really cool premise for a film. And plus, I don't know about you, but I love shark movies.
Yeah.
I absolutely love them. Like, I even started watching the other day Avalanche Sharks.
Oh, how is that?
I had to turn it off only because we had small kids over. I was watching it at my parents' house at Easter, I think. And so there were small kids over, and like the language was pretty dirty pretty quick. And so I was like, I'm going to go ahead and turn this off, because I don't want to be the asshole that's like making, you know, people watch that shouldn't be. So
yeah,
anyway, but either way, I mean, that's right up my alley. Like,
oh no, it looks good.
Like, so, I'm a huge fan of ice spiders. And so
I think this is going to take itself a little bit more seriously.
Avalanche sharks.
Oh, no, I was still talking about The Shallows.
Oh no. Yeah, no, I was just comparing ice spider to avalanche sharks. No, yeah. But yeah, no, that sounds pretty cool. I saw a trailer over the weekend for The Bye Bye Man. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
I hadn't either. It looked really cool, but even though that's a terrible name, right? The Bye Bye Man.
That's terrible. It's like, it's like what a little kid would call an assassin.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. And he was supposed to be like a, basically just kind of, it's pretty much the boogeyman. But what is kind of cool is it's by the people that produced Oculus and something else, The Strangers.
So WWE Films.
No, I think that it's maybe another producer. So I don't know. But it looked really cool. It kind of looks trippy, like Oculus, in the sense that these people, like, he can make you see stuff. as well. So, like, the end of the trailer is this woman that's, like, running after this family stuck on train tracks. And the guy's like, no, it's a trap. And she gets there, and she looks, and the family's gone. And then the train, like, it implies that it hits her. Yeah. So, anyway. But, no, I mean, like, it looks really, really, really cool. So, that would be my pick of the weekend.
Okay. I had two other quick things.
Yeah, go ahead.
Number one, Blu-ray release of The Return of the Living Dead.
Nice.
It's coming out by Scream Factory with, like, a new transfer and original audio and all kinds of other stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I'm super excited about that.
They redid the cover. The Scream Factory cover looks awesome on it.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of miss the old one with the zombie with the mohawk coming out of the grave.
Yeah. But
eh.
But eh.
I have no, you know, I can't do anything about it.
Well, obviously. So and even if you could, would you want to invest the time?
No.
But I thought it was really cool. Sometimes those Scream Factory releases, like, the artwork on them really sucks.
Yeah. And they'll do, like, a screen cap.
I don't know that they do go that lazy. Like, they're like, nah, we invest all the time and money on our transfers and extra, but here's a lazy ass screen cap.
Here's some stick figure drawings.
But
I one other little quick thing to do, just because I think it's funny.
Uh-huh.
And also I'm logged into it as BMovieBot.
Yeah. Why are you logged into that?
Because it was the only other one I had the password to right after. And also, you kicked me out of the other
one. Oh, yeah. I think I remember that. Apparently, yeah, you're banned from B-movies and e-books. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
So, basically, it's just a Twitter bot that pieces together old horror movie plots and sci-fi movie plots and tries to make new ones.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny.
It's very hit or miss.
And that was this week we start, or yeah, this week that it started, right? Yeah, yeah. So follow at @B_MovieBot. If you follow, I think there's another one, so make sure that you follow the
I had to do _ because you can't do hyphen.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So there's not a BMovieBot?
I mean, you can do B-MovieBot, and it'll come up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, either way. But
some of them are pretty great.
Yeah.
Some of them don't make any sense.
Yeah. But the ones that don't make sense are my favorites.
My favorite one from yesterday was War and a Monkey. It's like, what kind of movie would that be?
It's one that piqued my interest.
Yeah,
but yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to go ahead and jump into reviews?
Yeah.
All right.
Which one do you want to do first?
I don't know. Let's jump into Matt Stott's book.
Okay.
So we'll be back with our review for A Monstrous Place.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out later.
There's nothing about that I dislike.
I don't think she's listened to episode yet.
It's so good.
It's still scary, right?
It makes me uncomfortable.
Oh, scary as shit. New episodes every Tuesday. A B&D Network podcast. Scary as shit. We're not that scary.
Okay, and we're back with our review of A Monstrous Place by Matthew Stott. Okay, so here's the synopsis, or part of the synopsis. Things lie between awake and asleep. In the moment after your eyes grow too heavy to stay open, but before the dreams take you. And then, I guess I should keep going, because that doesn't really tell you anything. So it says, Molly lives with her mother in a large creaking house that she wishes were haunted. There may be no ghosts, but what about monsters? Monsters with an unending appetite that like to steal people away in the black of night.
That's better. Okay, and I think that we should go ahead and mention the fact that this is supposedly a children's book.
This is a children's book. But if anybody's ever listened to us before, they know that we read children's books from time to time.
Yeah. So it's like a teeter totter between extreme horror and then like creepy kids books, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, mainly in October when we do hashtag spooky month.
Yeah. but yeah, so I don't know. I think children's, I don't know what, if this is like a children's book or like a young adult book.
I think it's tween.
So like,
I mean, like, I think if you're 8 or 9, you're probably not going to read it. If you're older, you could read it and still enjoy it. But I think it's probably marketed at like 12, 13.
Yeah. And this wasn't like as graphic as The Merciless or anything like that. I would think that that's probably a 15, like teenagers. 15, 16. Yeah. But, and the fact that the main character was real young, I don't even remember how old Molly was.
I don't think it actually said.
I took it that she was like 8 to 10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, because it mentioned the boy who goes missing in the beginning.
Oh, really?
Says he was like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And then it said she was a year older or a grade older.
Yeah.
So she's probably like 9.
Yeah. So... So basically she goes into this dream world, right? And then crazy stuff happens. I will say that I was surprised, very, very surprised. This is the second book that we've reviewed by Matthew Stott. The first one being 66, and that was an adult book. But I remember at the time, we both loved it. But me being like, I think that kids could read this. Remember? And you're like, no, no, it's definitely not. But yeah, there was something about it that seemed like it kind of was geared toward the younger reader.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about 66?
Yeah. And I think what it was the urban legend aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
Whereas like extreme horror and stuff like that is generally based less in the supernatural, more in the real world, and it is a much more adult audience, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah. Okay, I gotta say, just first off, my expectations were very high because of 66.
Yeah, 66 was great.
Like, I think 66 probably was my favorite book that we read last year.
Yeah.
And
I was agreeing that it was probably your favorite book.
Yeah. And I believe we both gave it 4.5s, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But I really, really wanted to like this book.
And did you?
I loved it.
Oh, man. You kept me in suspense.
Gotcha. Got him. No, it was, I actually really, really love this book. The one thing that I will say is it a kid's book?
Well, okay. It really starts off, like, I thought about this book. Like, it gave me sort of a Goosebumps vibe, but if Goosebumps toned up the horror and violence a bit.
Yeah, people maybe not die violence. In this.
I don't want to say violence, because that implies like that there's some, like, there is a couple of little violent parts, but there's like a layer of like grotesqueness about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get super spoilery with it, because I tend not to spoil things I like. but speaking of which, we're going to be talking a lot about Dead 7 later.
Yeah, spoilers away.
but there's some parts in it that I think, and maybe I'm wrong, you know, that the average like little kid would probably get grossed out or freaked out.
Grossed
by.
Out?
Like the basement?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I can see that. It doesn't really go over the edge into like blood and guts, although it is straight up like where R.L. Stine didn't really kill people in Goosebumps books. Even whenever you'd think people were dead at the end, generally they come back. Am I right?
Yeah. Or it would be like a chapter break.
Yeah.
And then it would be like, and the axe came down. And then the next chapter would be like, but it missed him, so he was okay.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Damn it, this one
straight up was just like, nah, no. This little girl is going to see some screwed up stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Molly comes away from this having seen some shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't want to spoil anything, but I mean, it gets dark quick. The first third of this book, especially, I was just like, my gosh. You know?
The first chapter of this book.
Yeah.
Like, it had me. Because, like, it does the normal horror movie trope thing. I mean, Scream did it and everything, right? Where it introduces a character just to kill them.
Yeah.
So, spoiler alert for that very first chapter. But, I mean,
but kinda, that kid straight up dies.
That kid straight up dies. And it was creepy as hell, too, the way it happened.
Exactly.
You know? And it's like, I think what this had and what 66 had is like, Stott seems to have this way of kind of painting a really creepy atmosphere over everything. Cause it's the same way with 66 was like that too, where it's like not necessarily like things that are scary happening.
Yeah.
But you're like, you don't know where the story is going to go and you're creeped out about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It starts out just to kind of, since we already kind of spoiled the chapter.
Oh yeah, we spoiled it.
It starts off with a kid in bed that keeps hearing a voice that's basically just beckoning him to come outside.
Yeah, like a disembodied voice.
And he goes outside and he sees his dead brother.
Yeah.
And the brother's like, come on, come closer, come closer. And from there it gets worse. So, yeah. Anyway, I will say that it legitimately, like, it's not that this really scared me or anything, but it was effective horror. I'll put it that way.
It was very effective.
Very effective.
And I think if our ages were still in the single digits, we would have been really scared. Or not really scared.
Well, I mean, much more than like a Goosebumps, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think, like, if Goosebumps is little kid horror, right, this is the next step.
Yeah. One thing that I love about young adult versus just regular horror.
Old adult.
Huh?
Old adult.
Yeah, I guess just versus adult horror. But one thing that I do love about young adult horror is it just seems to, like, the pacing is amped up big time. You know, it's like there's not really years pass and stuff like that in most young adult that I've read. I could be wrong because I haven't read just a whole ton. I haven't read a ton of young adult stuff, but what I've read, it just seems to be like, this is the story and it happens and it happens and it happens all the way to the end. You know, it's not like, it's not like it takes a break and it's like, and they always remembered that summer looking back, you know?
Well, I think it's because of the target audience.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it keeps the attention span.
Yeah. And you start doing all kinds of flashbacks and junk like that. It's little kids are going to get lost.
Yeah. So, anyway, like, I don't know. I really appreciate the amped up pacing, and this this book was really no exception to, you know, what I've experienced. Yeah, and to the pacing issues on the other stuff. But I don't know. I really, really, really like this book. And it's the first book in a series of, what is it called? Tales of In Between?
Is it the first one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I really want to see where he goes from here, but the fact that we kind of review stuff all the time really doesn't make for many books that we don't cover on here.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I mean, it's basically an anthology though, right?
Yeah. From what I understand. So, like, basically he's kind of set up this world of in between sleep and awake. It's just this creepy ass world. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the rest of them are going to be dealing with that.
Well, I would think that it is because it's Tales of In Between.
Under the umbrella. Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't know.
I could be
Twilight
wrong.
Twilight Zone didn't always have like
a zone.
Daybreak stuff. Yeah, there wasn't always zones.
Yeah. No.
But no, I don't know. Like I hate to keep comparing this to R.L. Stein, but I really feel like this could be a new Goosebumps. You know, like
this Tales of In Between.
Yeah, depending on how quickly he could pump them out. Because, I mean, not everybody pumps like a new one or new two or three books out a month. But I don't know. I think it's off to a really good start. And, you know, what I really like about the young adult stuff is, like, sorry, I was laughing at Rodney. But what I really like about the young adult stuff is I like horror and I like graphic stuff. But I also like the fact that it doesn't have to rely on that. You know, it's very much more about like the character study, right? And the things that they're facing. And then sometimes, like in situations like this, like just legitimately creepy things, you know, as opposed to getting scared by just like violence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, there would be a way to write this exact same story really jacked up, right?
Oh, you could put like horrible blood and gore into it.
Yeah, but it really doesn't take away anything not to have it. Yeah. And it has it in places. It's just he dials back, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Like, I want to read everything this guy puts out. In fact, I hit him up on Twitter just telling him that we're covering this book this week, which always has to be an odd, random thing that,
yeah,
you know, I'll send
especially
the authors.
When we do it like the day before.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, we're covering your book tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, what? Who are you?
Yeah, exactly. And especially like him, who I don't know that we've ever really talked before on Twitter. I think I've liked a few of his tweets. Maybe that's about it. And so, you know, just kind of out of left field, like, hey, we're covering your book and it's a kid's book, you know. And so yeah. Anyway, but he told us, or he told me that he is going to be putting out another, I think 66 was the only non-young adult thing that he's written at this point, but there's a new one coming out in June. So I want to 67. Possibly...
67.
Huh?
Yeah, 67.
Yeah. No, it's like a new adult horror book coming out in June. And so I really, really want to see what he's got in store for us, because at this point in my book, he's batting 1,000.
Yeah.
But even though I haven't read all of it, but
yeah,
he's batting 1,000 out of my samples. So anyway, yeah. So what would you actually give this?
I want to go 4.
I think it's a very, very solid 4.
Yeah.
It's not as engaging as 66 was, but I think also a lot of that is that we're not the target audience.
Yeah.
But I think unlike Goosebumps, where you can go back and read it and appreciate it for what it was, you don't really need the nostalgia for this, like, to enjoy it. It is a good, good story. You know, young adult or horror, it doesn't really matter. It's a good story. It reminded me a lot of The Thief of Always by Clive Barker.
Mm-hmm.
And not just thematically. And it was very well written. He's a really good author. So,
and I think from like a kid's perspective, right? If you're a little kid into horror, right, then this would be amazing, because the main character in it is going to be very, very relatable,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like she's going around her old house like wishing it was haunted, you know, and like there's a part where it says that she jumps into like dark rooms hoping to find ghouls, like, you know, and catch them by surprise, mm-hmm. and junk like that. And it's like, I know whenever I was a little kid, I was into, you know, I guess I'm still am, but into horror movies and junk like that. And it's like, I think I would have found it very relatable, and I think that would have helped connect a little bit more. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I think it was really well done, really successful. If you've got kids that like horror, or if you like reading young adult books,
like, yeah, and you know,
for
I
some
think-
reason.
Well, I think that honestly, it's weird. Like, we grew up listening to punk rock, and we both love horror. And so it's like punk rock and horror. And in both cultures, there's this chip on people's shoulder, like, where people want to always be like, oh, yeah, whatever, that's a PG-13, or like, whatever, that band's weak, or what, you know? And it's just like, dude, you're never really going to be able to live and experience a lot of things if you carry that chip on your shoulder, where you always have to have the most extreme movies or the most extreme music. Like, there's a time and place for a lot of things. And yeah, you don't have to like it all, but I guarantee you will like some of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I have no qualms in saying, and I never really did have qualms in saying that Britney Spears' Toxic is an amazing song.
That's a good song.
And likewise, I mean, like, to say that, you know, this, like, to totally disregard young adult horror is a really, really stupid move. Because think of all the things that would fall into that category, like all the films that would fall into that category if films were categorized like that. Like The Ring, Jaws.
Goonies.
Yeah, but I mean, like, The Ring would be a young adult horror film.
Well, I mean, it's basically PG-13 horror films.
Yeah.
Would be young adult.
Yeah, and so you're discounting, even though we gripe, I don't know about you, I do gripe about PG-13 horror. It's the fact that for a long time, that was the only thing coming out, and they were watering things down just to make the money and then releasing better DVDs. So why didn't you just wait for DVD, you know, like an unrated cut? But I mean, either way, it's just like
the way I see it, though, is like PG-13 horror is not necessary. It's, well, like we just said, it's young adult. It's to grab younger audiences, you know, and then it's like, if you grab them then they're going to be, you know, horror fans for the rest of their life sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's, I think it's, I don't want to say necessary, but I don't think it's a bad thing. And we've talked about this before on the show. Not every movie needs to be hard R.
What?
You know, there's tons of movies that lend themselves to less gore or anything like that. You know, like we talk about ghost stories and stuff.
Honestly, ghost stories are very effective horror for me. Like, I get more creeped out reading ghost stories than about killers and stuff. You know, my wife actually makes fun of me for it because she's like, if we hear a noise in the night, she's like, yeah, you're like ghosts. And I'm like, there's a killer in the house. So anyway, but no, I mean, just like ghost stuff and paranormal stuff, it fascinates me, and it's scary, and it totally, totally does not always, and most of the time shouldn't really call for a rated R.
No, I don't think it necessarily needs it. I mean, I think that, you know, if the story, you know, it stands enough on its own, then cool. If the story warrants being an R-rated, like needs to be an R-rated or worse, like, I don't know, House of a Thousand Corpses or something.
Then
like, that's what it needs to do. I think context is the key.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So I don't know. If you're not into young adult horror, this is a good place to, like, this title is actually a really, really good one to check out just to see. And so,
yeah.
Anyway, with that, are you good?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, we'll be back with our review of Dead 7.
He pulls me into this dark office alone. He lays me down, and he's like, take off your shirt. He was good. He was a professional. Jason's warm. He loops me all up, gets it done. And he's rubbing this thing all over. He's very gentle with me. I'm about to pass out. Dude, it's taking forever. And now I'm slightly out of breath. He squirts me down all over my belly. But he did say that I didn't have to put my shirt back on, which was weird.
Oh, yeah. They also talk about comics. Long Box Small Talk. Weekly. On bmoviesandebooks.com.
And we're back with our review of Dead 7. So basically, in a post-apocalyptic future where human teeth are treated as currency and zombies are named copperheads, a woman named Apocalypta seeks to rule the Earth with her ever-increasing horde of copperhead slaves. There's only one hope for humanity, a shit ton of boy band members dressed up in cheap costumes. That was my own personal synopsis
of
this film.
Did you put that on IMDb?
No, but I should.
I think you should.
It's pretty accurate. Why were they named copperheads again?
Okay, it didn't explain it until like an hour and 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, and by that time I had already tuned the hell out.
At first, I was thinking it was probably just like, because this thing is a Western, yeah. Sort of. Okay. Like, I was thinking, oh, it's just like copperhead snakes or something, and they're trying to make it all Western-y because it's talking about snakes. But no, apparently, like, the zombies originated from a copper mine. I don't even understand. They never really said anything. Okay. Where do we start with this movie? Can I say basically this movie had a lot of things that I wanted to love about it.
Me too.
Okay. It was all right. One of my favorite zombie type things, and it doesn't get explored very much, but is after the zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the zombie apocalypse already happened, people are back to like living a semi-normal life.
So like, right? Maggie.
Yeah, I love that. Okay. Uh-huh. Because I want to see the rebuilding for some reason. I don't know. It interests me. Okay. So it was that. It was a Western. Okay. Uh-huh. but Western zombie is intriguing to me. Okay. The Apocalypta chick, Deborah Wilson for some reason. But
who is that?
Mad TV.
That was who it was?
Yeah. She was like a voodoo priestess.
Yeah.
Right. And she was enslaving the zombies with voodoo magic, basically, which I'm totally down for that.
Yeah.
Okay. And it had a ton of boy band members. These are all things that I would love to see in a movie. Right. And it just, none of it worked.
No, it all fell
none
apart.
None of it. And it was so disappointing. Like, I have no idea what this movie was even trying to be.
You know, because
there were parts that were trying to be comedy, right? I don't think I laughed at one of the actual jokes.
No, they threw a lot of things at the screen and none of it landed.
Yeah, it was like whenever I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, it's like they had a whole bunch of plot points, right? Like, oh, I want this to happen and this to happen. And then they didn't write how you get from point A to point B.
Exactly. Yeah. Honestly, though, it kind of, conventionally speaking, this might be the best Asylum film. It doesn't look like shit.
Yeah, like, it looks good.
It looks good. It seems to be competently shot. That's it. Yeah. That's about it.
The end. Yeah. I mean, you can tell that they blew their entire budget on boy band members.
Yeah.
Right? Because there was no money for anything else.
Mm-mm.
Like, one part in particular, like whenever you see Apocalypta's army at the end, and they're like, oh, it's her army. And it's like behind this fence. And it's like literally like seven people. Yeah. I'm like, what's going on? But I don't know. There's so much about this movie that was bad.
Yeah. And like, let's not kid ourselves. Sharknado is a turd. Like, it's not a good movie. But because it wasn't a good movie and so bad that it became something.
And Sharknado knew what it was.
Yeah. And I felt like this was like, oh, we will do this straightforward at times movie with boy band members, and it's just going to go viral too. Like, it was a blatant attempt at going viral, you know?
And exactly.
It just,
because you have this big wave of rehashing 90s nostalgia.
Yeah.
Right.
So you had like, who was it? AJ McClain.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Fatone.
Is he the one that was the clown guy?
Yeah.
AJ?
Yeah.
That was the worst character I've ever seen in my life.
Really? I didn't dislike him.
Well, the first third of the movie, whenever all he does is just laugh,
uh-huh.
It was so annoying.
Yeah. So
Joey Fatone.
Joey Fatone, Nick Carter. You have John Cicada for some reason. Like,
I don't remember.
He's just like a pop rock guy. Yeah, I looked it up because I was like, he can't be hurting for money. He was huge in the early 90s. Yeah, he sold 20 million albums, so I don't know why he was in this.
The dude from Everclear?
Yeah, Art from Everclear shows up for no reason.
Chris Kirkpatrick?
Yeah. And so out of all of these people, which the Everclear guy kind of has the look of an actor, and he was okay.
He was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just saying versus normal actors, he was okay. Like, he wasn't bad. Yeah.
No,
in this movie, he was a damn...
He was the shining star.
Yeah. Only to be outshone...
He was the Charlton Heston by this in this movie.
He was what?
The Charlton Heston of this movie.
Yeah, well, I still think that Joey Fatone took it. He was really good. Now, his character kind of sucked. Like, I liked him until the end when all of a sudden he just starts being like, hey, whatever, you know, like one line and everything.
He didn't do anything.
No, but I liked his character. He was this guy that just stayed drunk throughout the entire thing. And he had this awesome plan where if he had this... this thing of like this little flask of whiskey, and then he also had a flask of blood, so that if he ever turned into a zombie, he'd pull the flask of blood, and it was rigged to the explosives that evidently he wears all the time.
Yeah.
And so if it turns, he wanted to go ahead and blow up. Yeah. I thought Joey Fatone, this is two movies now where I think that he's a good actor. I liked Joey Fatone as an actor. He's good.
He was definitely the best part of this movie.
Yeah. Now, this whole thing was like spearheaded by Nick Carter. I read a little bit about it.
Okay.
He had been wanting to get in, he's been wanting to get into like acting and making films for a while. And apparently he'd been trying for years on this other one, and it all looked like it was going somewhere, and then the director died, and so this was what was made in light of that. So he, even though he didn't really get credited, the story is by him, but someone else wrote the script.
Okay, so he wrote the plot points.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then no one else connected the dots.
But for someone that put so much work into it, he was probably the most forgettable character. Like, it seems like he had a lot in charge, and he just kind of hung out and wore a cowboy hat.
I'm trying to remember who he even was.
Remember they had that love triangle?
Yeah.
He was the guy, the cowboy guy.
And I like how they never explained like what it was, because they were like, we've got a past and stuff. And it's like, well, so do we. And then like later, like way later, it was like, come on, we got to get my brother. And it's like, wait a second. It never specifically said that, right?
Yeah, it is. It's odd. This film is totally odd. But like, I felt like Nick Carter was okay, but totally forgettable, and that sucks to be like the guy putting all the work into being like all the work into the project and coming out with like the shittiest character. Because even like Chris Kirkpatrick couldn't act his way out of a paper bag, but his character was more memorable, you know?
Yeah.
But honestly, I felt like the source material of this wasn't bad. This would have been a great comic book.
Yeah, like, I was thinking like it would have been a great comic book. But the thing is, though, when you have the lead guy in basically a cowboy hat with a revolver shooting zombies, it's going to be The Walking Dead. You know, people are going to make that like connection between
the
two. So what,
The Walking Dead gets to be the only thing with a cowboy? I mean, they can make
it. But I'm saying like the imagery behind it is very, very similar.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think that would fall by the wayside after a while. I mean, nobody... I remember at first, a lot of people were giving The Walking Dead shit about it having the same beginning as 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that with time, it... you know, that stigma would fall away from it.
It would pull out his own notch.
Yeah.
That's not even a saying.
No, I was scanning my brain for, is that a thing?
It would make its own way, basically.
Yeah. It would walk that paper horse.
Yeah, exactly. You got what I'm saying.
But no, like, so I don't know. Like, so it's not a good movie, right?
No. So much of it was bad. Like there were so many action scenes where, especially with the Komodo character, whenever he's fighting with the swords and stuff, right? Where he would just stab at something off screen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and then he would just pull it back and you wouldn't see any zombie die or anything like that. It was just, he was stabbing off panel and that was it. And you'd hear like a splorsh sound.
Yeah.
And that would be it. You know, so many of like the zombie kills and everything were just not shown at all.
Yeah.
You know, and that's whatever, you know, you can tell, I think they used all their special effects money on the last battle.
Oh, yeah,
that's definitely where you actually see stuff. Now, it's a lot of like the trademark Asylum CGI blood.
Uh-huh.
But some of it was actually really good. Like they'd shoot a zombie and his like half of his head would blow off and stuff. It was not all bad.
Like I said, I feel like it was the most competently made Asylum entry I've ever seen. It's not my favorite, but it's just, there was so much wrong with it, you know?
I know. It like, had so much potential.
You know, I honestly am starting to think that the Asylum's like fundamentally against second takes. Like, just whatever happens,
It would be funny if they're, like, still shooting on film, you know, and that's what it is.
Yeah,
because film is just super expensive.
I mean, that's why Lloyd Kaufman's having to go to Kickstarter, because he's like, I have to shoot on film. And it would be, like, there's no point. It turns, I don't know what he does, but his stuff always looks like it's on a camcorder. He's like, I shot this one in 35. Like,
well, by film, he means DV tapes.
But, yeah. So the pacing in this thing, I don't know about you, but I wanted to fall asleep so bad watching this. Like, this thing, the pacing was slow. And like, I never honestly felt like anything was at stake here, because the characters, even though they were all so different and archetypes of like different tropes, basically. You know, the bad guy was basically, it was, or the clown one was like the Joker, you know, and you had a cowboy, you had a samurai, you had, you know,
you had like the cool jock guy, like the cowboy's brother.
Yeah. And so on one hand, like as different as they all were, like they were totally interchangeable. Like I was just like, oh, so that one died. That one died. Okay. I don't really care.
the only ones that really had any personality were like Whiskey Joe and like the priestess chick.
Yeah,
that's it, you know, really. I don't know, like, now I forgot what I was gonna say about it. Like the pacing was all over the place, and there was like parts where I honestly had no clue what was actually happening, you know.
Same here.
Like they go visit a whorehouse. Like, because they've split up, right? And they go visit a whorehouse, and then all of a sudden the whores, like, turn on them and start, like, attacking them for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, and then they mention, like, I think they might have mentioned a bounty, but who put the bounty on them?
I don't know.
I don't know. And it's, like, the whole reason they got together. Okay, because they capture the clown guy at the beginning. Right. And he breaks out of jail, which I'm pretty sure that wall was made out of cardboard. But but they break out of jail. And but then the sheriff basically is like, let's round up a posse to go get the clown guy. Right.
Yeah.
That's what the reasoning was for.
Mm-hmm.
OK, they spend like 4 days in the movie getting people together before they leave.
Yeah, Which, like, seriously, all of it could have been done with a montage, because they were still doing montage stuff to introduce the characters, a la Smoke and Aces. Like, it was kind of like that. And
They each got their own, like, title card.
Yeah, they literally could have been like, let's get a posse together and just shown those scenes and then have them on their way. You know? Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, they spend all that time in movie, right? Because it's like the guy escapes at night. They don't even start getting people together until the next day.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you wait? Like, I don't understand. None of this movie made sense.
No, no. It was bad, bad. And that sucks, because it's something that I really, like, when I heard about it, I was like, we have to watch this, you know? It's right up our alley. So, like, on one hand, it was really good to see, like, you know, that these people from the 90s are all still alive.
But Chris Kirkpatrick's not dead.
Yeah, but, like, on the other hand, like, am I sure that I really missed him in the first place? You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, well, yeah, that guy existed. Like, the samurai guy, I vaguely remember him being in a boy band. I couldn't tell you what band.
I don't know. You know? I really don't.
So, anyway, like, there wasn't even Street. Dude. Yeah, Rodney commented in the chat, O Street.
I don't know, man. And there was, like, just, like, grievous errors in logic, like, too.
Yeah.
Like at the final battle, okay, you've got the samurai guy, Komodo, versus clown dude, right? And there's zombies attacking the clown guy, right? Oh, like, just a whole swarm of them. But then they just kind of let him go so Komodo and him can have a duel for a second, right? And then later the zombies come back. It's just like, and I don't know. It's just, I can't even explain it.
Yeah, it's a bad film. So I'm going to go ahead.
Nothing.
I'm going to go ahead and rate this.
5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. It was all jokes. We loved it. No, I will say 1.5.
That's exactly what I was going to do, because there were still parts that I genuinely liked. So I can't go all the way 1.
Yeah. But I would never watch this film again.
No. No. 1.5.
Yeah. But
Does that make it our lowest rated movie?
No. I think Axe Giant was 1.5 too.
Well, Axe Giant was so much better. Yeah. I want to, like, retroactively up my Axe Giant score based on this movie.
Yeah, and something tells me we're going to hit a lot lower point than this.
Probably.
But, all right, well, unless you have anything else to add, I think I'm good.
No.
All right. Well, make sure and subscribe.
Oh, no. I do have something else to add.
Okay.
Like, a blatant disregard for Line of Fire. Okay. there was a part where they were fighting in a tavern.
Uh-huh.
Right. And one of the guys was like a sharpshooter sniper rifle guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So two things. Number one, sniper rifles don't work in close quarters when you're looking through a scope like that. Okay, when you're seriously shooting a person 5 feet away from you with a sniper rifle.
Uh-huh.
But also, in that scene and others, like, he shot, like, a zombie headshot while, like, the zombie is right up in the other person's face.
Yeah.
And there was another part where somebody was, like, on the ground being attacked by a zombie, and one of the other characters came up. See, they're all interchangeable. I don't even remember who it was.
Yeah.
But the other person came up with, like, a 44 mag revolver, put it right up to the zombie's head and fired. And then the guy was fine. You know, it's like that would have gone through both of them.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. It was just bad. Okay, I think I'm done.
Yeah, I'm totally done. Like, this episode.
Like, no, I think, yeah, we're done with the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, so anyway, follow the B&E Master Feed To check out other fine podcasts on our podcast network, such as Long Box Small Talk, The Adventures of Toxic City, if it ever comes back, our brand new network podcast, Scary as Shit.
And Two Versus Three.
And Two Versus Three. And
hopefully some others on the way.
Yeah, we should know mid this month whether or not there's another podcast coming our way. So anyway, yeah, the best way to keep in touch, I think we have releases on most of the weekdays. Is that?
Yep.
And so.
Yeah. Well, if Toxic City ever comes back,
yeah,
then we're going to have there's a new show Monday through Friday.
Yeah. So the best day. Way to do this and listen to everything is to just subscribe to the B&E master feed. And, that's about it. Also, I think there's a few more days on the 15% off sale for our shirts, right?
By the time this lands on iTunes, it'll be over. But if you're listening to it live, then yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Rodney, buy a shirt. but yeah, so check out bandepod.com/shop. There's a lot of new shirts that Brian put up there this week that are like some retro horror shirts, and they're really, really cool. So
thanks.
Anyway, but with that, I guess we're going to get.
Yeah. Check us out on Twitter at B&E Pod, Facebook also at B&E Pod. Yeah, I think that's it.
The podcast you just heard is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by BMoviesandEbooks.com.